The Writer Files, a member of the Podglomerate Network.
I publish a book a year, so typically I'm writing one book in some stage of editing another and then promoting a third, you know, at various times. So it does kind of become a bit of a deadline-driven game where if I know I have edits due on one novel, that's going to be my primary focus and I'm going to kind of set everything aside and just really dive deep into whatever the 1 week, 2 week deadline I have to get those edits back to my publisher, you know, for the publication timeline. Or for example, like this week when I'm doing promotion, I'm not really writing too much, but then, you know, I'll shift focus and be able to delve back into the book that I'm working on. So it's definitely something that you learn to be responsive to things and kind of prioritize and multitask, you know, in terms of getting the books finished and focusing on them when you need to.
And welcome back to The Writer Files. I am your host, Kelton Reed, wishing you pages, patience, and perseverance per usual. New York Times bestselling author Chanel Cleeton spoke to me about her passion for exploring Cuban-American identity via women's perspectives throughout history, how she plots her popular historical fiction, and her latest novel, The Cuban Heiress. Chanel is the New York Times and USA Today bestselling author of Reese Witherspoon's book club pick next year in Havana, as well as instant New York Times bestsellers When We Left Cuba and Last Train to Key West. Her most recent historical fiction entry is The Cuban Heiress, described as a novel inspired by true events that follows two women whose lives become intertwined during a fateful journey upon the SS Morro Castle, a luxury cruise liner that caught fire and sank on its way from Havana to New York in September 1934. Booklist wrote of the book, "Nothing is what it seems in Cleeton's latest gripping historical novel. Handsome con men, clever thieves, desperate rebels, and our valiant heroines all convene in this elegant but doomed ocean liner." Cleeton includes vivid details about the mysterious final voyage of the Morro Castle and provides further reading about this historic disaster. In this file, Chanel and I discussed how she turned a law degree into a writing career, why every writer needs to write that terrible first book, the research process of a book-a-year writer, exploring lesser-known events shaping Cuban-American culture, how her characters speak to her in her daily life, why writers need to dig deep to overcome rejection, and a lot more. Stay calm and write on. And don't forget, you can always support this show by heading to writerfiles.fm, where you can also sign up for email updates, get links to merch, and other resources for writers. And if you're a fan of The Writer Files, please click follow to automatically see new interviews in your podcatcher as soon as they're published, and drop us a rating or a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you tune in to help other writers find us. All right, we are back on The Writer Files. I am thrilled today to be joined by an esteemed guest. I have New York Times bestselling author Chanel Cleeton is joining us. Thank you so much for taking the time to do this. I know that you're a busy lady, but what's happening over there these days?
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so thrilled to be here. This is release week for The Cuban Heiress, so I've been talking about the book and chatting with readers, and it's one of my favorite parts of the job. So I'm so thrilled to be here and talk about books and writing with you.
I can't wait to talk about The Cuban Heiress, of course, and all things writing and Cuba and this fascinating career of yours. But let's talk about kind of wind the clock back a little bit, as we do with so many authors, and talk about this winding path to bestseller, because I understand you have quite a background in education. You have a bachelor's in international relations and a master's in global politics. But not only that, you also got a Juris Doctor. Is that right? So were you planning to become a lawyer at one point?
I was, yes. I was in law school when I really kind of started pursuing my passion for writing. I realized law school wasn't perhaps the best fit for me. And, you know, even though I graduated with my law degree, I really found my love for writing at that time.
Interesting. So talk a little bit about that shift for you. What inspired you to go down this path? And then, of course, I want to talk about kind of the subject matter of a lot of your novels, but yeah, what was kind of the light switch for you?
So I've always been a really big reader. I mean, it's kind of the one of my earliest memories is reading, and it's something that has followed me throughout my life. And when I was in law school and sort of realized it perhaps wasn't what I wanted to do with my life, I started thinking about things that I was passionate about and what I enjoyed. And I kept coming back to that love for books. And so I thought, why don't I try to write a book and see how it goes? And I wrote my first book, which was honestly pretty terrible. And I got lots of rejections, deservedly so, from agents. But from that, I really realized I wanted to keep at it. And so I was really fortunate. I did an internship with a literary agency, which was incredibly helpful for me to learn the business. And then I just kept writing until I found an agent. And then eventually we sold my first book and it sort of took off from there.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, I think this is your sixth novel. Is that correct?
So I actually wrote romance before I wrote historical fiction.
Okay.
So this is, I think, my sixth historical fiction, but I'm maybe at like 16 published books, 17, something like
wow.
that.
Okay.
I haven't counted, but yes.
Okay, so 16 published books, and this is your sixth historical fiction novel.
Best guess, yes. Without me counting,
guess.
Yes.
Okay, cool. Well, that's fascinating. Yeah, so maybe talk a little bit about kind of that evolution and what kind of the deciding factor to go into historical fiction, because I feel like, and I always talk about this with authors of historical fiction, that this is some of the most tedious to write, because it is obviously you are taking some very specific time periods and some actual real life events to formulate these stories around. But yeah, talk a little bit about how you became inspired. Obviously, it seems like your background and all the things has lent itself to this path. But yeah, talk a little bit about how that change occurred.
So I've written in quite a few genres. I've only published in, you know, a few, but before that, when I was trying to get a publishing deal, I wrote young adult, I've written young adult suspense. So really, if I like to read it, I like to write it. That's kind of my approach to these things. And when I started writing historical fiction, it really came from a personal connection I had. I'm Cuban American. And I was really inspired by sort of delving a little bit deeper into my Cuban American identity and writing about, you know, my relationship with my grandmother and the Cuban Revolution, which was a really formative experience for my family. They came to this country in 1967 following the revolution. And, you know, it was just something I had kind of grown up hearing about so much living in a Cuban household. And so I wanted to explore that in my writing. And from there, my debut historical fiction, Next Year in Havana, was born. And I created a fictional family, the Perez family, in that book. And really, the characters just started speaking to me. And I found that there were other characters in the book who were kind of begging for their stories to be told. And that has really led me on this incredible journey writing historical fiction, where I've been able to go back into the past and learn more about moments in Cuban history that I was less familiar with, and kind of have a broader understanding of my heritage and how all of these events have sort of tied in together.
It's an inspiring story, and kind of this passion for exploring the Cuban American culture and identity obviously plays a big part. Talk a little bit about the Cuban heiress, and then yeah, kind of that evolution and how you came to this really compelling story that, is probably a little bit different than the last one, but incorporates, you know, kind of a few different genre elements, including mystery, romance, even this crime story that kind of wends it all together. But yeah, talk a little bit about that evolution, how you came to the genesis of the latest.
So The Cuban Heiress is set in 1934, and it is inspired by the true story of the SS Morro Castle. And the Morro Castle was a luxury cruise liner that would take a round-trip voyage from New York to Havana. And when Prohibition was going on, it was kind of an opportunity for people to go on this ultimate party cruise. You know, you could drink, and they had a lot of fun while they were there. The Great Depression was obviously going on, and so it was really an escape for people from a lot of the economic and social pressures that were going on at that time. And then you also have the Cuban Revolution of 1933. So there's a lot of political turmoil happening in Cuba, and all of these factors sort of converge on this cruise ship. And I first learned about the Morro Castle when I was researching the previous book I'd written, Our Last Days in Barcelona. Our Last Days in Barcelona was set in the 1930s. And often when I've written a few books in that time period, and when I'm doing my research, I just kind of like to look at any events that are going on that perhaps won't make it into that novel, but are important for understanding the context of broader Cuban and American relations at the time. And I came across this mention of the ship, and it caught fire on its last voyage and was a great tragedy. And at the time, really kind of captivated the national attention in both the United States and in Cuba. And so when I heard about it, you know, in the research for Our Last Days in Barcelona, I knew it wasn't necessarily, you know, something that was going to fit into that novel, which was really centered on kind of Cuban and Spanish relations and the Spanish Civil War. But I knew that it was a subject I really wanted to pursue further. You know, I spend so much time kind of reading and researching and writing and then speaking about these books that it's that initial curiosity and passion that really drives me when I pick a subject. And so this was one that stuck with me, and the idea of sort of having this confined space where all of this drama would play out over a week, you know, as a writer offered new opportunities and challenges that I was really intrigued by. So it was a subject that I knew, you know, would be something I would really enjoy working with. And it was an incredible novel to work on.
Well, congrats on the reception of the latest. You have to be thrilled with all of the coverage and blurbs. The Cuban Heiress follows two women whose lives become intertwined during a fateful journey upon the SS Morro Castle, a luxury cruise liner that caught fire and sank on its way from Havana to New York in September 1934. Yeah, I thought some nice blurbs here. Natasha Lester, your colleague, said of the book, "Take one heiress with more than a few secrets, throw in a roguish jewel thief, and put them aboard a glittering cruise ship sailing from New York to Havana, and you have the perfect historical novel." That was a nice little blurb there.
Yes, I'm so grateful. There's such a wonderful community of authors kind of supporting each other, and it's so lovely to be able to share these books with them and read their work and just be part of the book community and the writing community. I think everyone has such a strong passion for what we do, and it really comes out, and it's amazing.
Yeah. Lots of great blurbs here. I will mention the book list coverage had just said, "Nothing is what it seems in Clayton's latest gripping historical novel. Handsome con men, clever thieves, desperate rebels, and our valiant heroines all convene on this elegant but doomed ocean liner." I suddenly questioned my pronunciation of heroin. Is that how you say heroin? I think it is. Curious. Anyway, congrats on the coverage. It's really cool to see. And so what's the vibe over there? How are you feeling this week with everything?
It's been wonderful. I was really fortunate. I did an in-person event at Books and Books, which is always so amazing in Miami. I had a great audience, and it's always so wonderful to speak with everyone and hear about their reaction to the books. And I was able to do an event with the Cuban Heritage Collection at the University of Miami that was also really special to me. So it's always nice to be able to kind of step away from the computer. And, you know, I think as writers, we live so much in our own heads that it's lovely to be able to have these conversations and to hear what people are reading and loving and how they're reacting to your books and that sort of thing. My readers have been so incredibly supportive, and I'm always just so grateful for their enthusiasm and their passion for these books.
For sure. Well, congrats on the latest. You've earned it. Yeah, so I do understand that next year in Havana was obviously named a Reese's Book Club pick, and I believe it was optioned for film, right?
Yes.
So this too has a very cinematic quality, at least in my estimation. Picking it up and you just kind of get sucked into it as a page turner. But have you been approached as of yet?
So we have not optioned the Cuban Heiress yet, but definitely, you know, there are always discussions and everything. It's Hollywood's such a different, you know, industry from what I know from publishing, that it's one of those things that would always be cool. And, you know, you sort of cross your fingers, but there's so many different steps that go into that I sort of just kind of focus on the books and we'll see what happens.
100%. Well, talk a little bit about this really interesting, you know, research piece for you, because these are pretty seemingly highly researched events in history. You know, you have to kind of abide by some rules in historical fiction. But yeah, talk a little bit about your research process and then how you kind of shut that down so that you're able to, you know, get some pages, get into flow state, and what that transition is like for you.
So I find that the research process is really, really useful in terms of kind of bearing out what the plot is going to look like. You know, obviously, as you mentioned, the historical events and the timeline and the circumstances surrounding these things are so important in controlling the character's movements and sort of the possibility for what they can do. So I really look at the historical record when I'm plotting out my books. And, you know, with this particular tragedy, there was quite a bit of investigation done in the fire's aftermath. And so having those first person accounts and looking at that information was really useful in kind of building out the timeline for the book.
Yeah, it must have lent a pretty solid outline for you.
Yes, I mean, definitely also following sort of the itinerary that the crews took was very useful. I knew from the beginning when I was setting up the book that I wanted it to cover the voyage of the ship. And so the timeline for the novel is, you know, you step in the opening chapter, you step on board with my heroines, and then you follow them throughout the journey of the cruise as though you're a passenger on the ship alongside them.
Yeah, that's very cool. Yeah, so tell us a little bit about your writing process when you're getting into flow state, kind of your best writing period, when you feel like you're making some headway, you're making some progress. Are you a morning? Are you an evening writer? Are you somebody who gets up crack of the dawn and makes the coffee and hits the typer? Or what kind of writer are you?
So I'll be honest and just say it kind of depends on the novel and sort of where I am in my process. I publish a book a year. So typically I'm writing one book in some stage of editing another and then promoting a third, you know, at various times. So it does kind of become a bit of a deadline driven game where if I know I have edits due on one novel, that's going to be my primary focus. And I'm going to kind of set everything aside and just really dive deep into whatever the 1 week, 2 week deadline I have to get those edits back to my publisher, you know, for the publication timeline. Yeah. Or for example, like this week when I'm doing promotion, I'm not really writing too much, but then, you know, I'll shift focus and be able to delve back into the book that I'm working on. So it's definitely something that you learn to be responsive to things and kind of prioritize and multitask, you know, in terms of getting the books finished and focusing on them when you need to. You know, sometimes I'll do a lot of front-loaded research. So with a book I wrote, The Most Beautiful Girl in Cuba, that was set during the Cuban fight for independence from Spain, I did quite a bit of front-loaded research on that one just because it was such an enormous amount of information. And there were so many different threads that kind of are connected in that novel. With some of my other books, you know, I'll do some front-loaded research. And then as I'm writing, I will continue to kind of augment, you know, as I go. And I did that with the Cuban era. So it really depends. Each book is kind of a new adventure and has new opportunities and challenges. So I sort of tackle each one a little bit differently as I go.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I am really, really interested in the latest and some of the thought process that went into it as well. But I couldn't help but think of kind of a more recent character in history who was like a con artist, I think, you know, known as Anna Delvey or Anna Sorokin, and that story of kind of her invented, you know, she had conned a lot of people into thinking that she was the heir to this, right, this large amount of money. But yeah, talk a little bit about kind of the invention of these characters and some of the thought process that goes into not only that, but kind of your penchant for, centering the story around women's narratives and the two different points of view.
So I really have a passion for kind of looking at women's experiences throughout history. I think often, you know, when we're going through the historical record, we tend to not see as much of women's perspectives being represented. And so when you can find those instances, I think it's really powerful and something that I personally enjoy working on a great deal. And in terms of my characters, they really sort of just kind of come to me speaking to me, and I try to listen to their voice and to the direction in which they're guiding me. They, when I'm working on a book, they live inside my head, sort of not just when I'm at my computer, but when I'm going about my daily life. And sometimes, you know, I'll be driving and I'll hear something that I have been kind of stuck with the plot, and it's the character sort of showing me the way. So, you know, each book, my characters are a little bit different. And I like that for my readers. I think it's important to kind of change things up. You know, when you've written so many books on kind of a similar subject. I want to make sure that my readers feel like they're always getting kind of a new experience and that there's something surprising in the book that they haven't read about from you before. So it's, I keep going back to, I like the kind of challenge and adventure of writing, and that comes with creating different characters that have their own unique motivations and stories. And I really let that sort of guide me through the process.
Well, congrats on the latest. Can you talk about what is next for you, what you're kind of working on for the future? I know, obviously, right now you're not writing, but what do you got in the hopper?
So I am currently editing what will be my 2024 release, and it is historical fiction. It's two timelines, and it's set at a fictional mansion in Miami. It's sort of a gothic novel with a lot of suspense, similar to the Cuban heiress, and it's set 1917, which is kind of a time when there's a lot of development coming to South Florida and these sort of grand mansions are being built. And then also 1941. So you see the two timelines and a kind of mystery that threads through both play out on the page. So it's been a lot of fun to work on, and I'm really excited to share that one with my readers next year.
Do you have a tentative title, or can you share that?
We are still going back and forth on titles. So that, unfortunately, okay. I cannot share. We'll see. I have my favorites, but we'll see what, you know, the team ends up deciding on.
Oh, for sure, for sure. I know that area has had some interesting development issues, especially with climate change and the sea levels rising. And then I think I woke up this morning to see that Fort Lauderdale had 2 feet of rain in 8 hours or something crazy.
There's been horrible flooding. The airport in Fort Lauderdale has been closed because of the flooding. I think they're set to reopen hopefully later today. But yes, no, it has been, the past few days have been a lot of rain and a lot of flooding.
Yeah, but you're kind of going back to the halcyon days of the Miami area. I'm sure that, and obviously there's just so much money and development still to this day, which just baffles the mind. Mm-hmm. But that's fascinating. Very interesting. Well, I know we got to wrap up here before we unleash your advice to fellow scribes on how to persevere. I would love to ask you a fun one. If you could have dinner with any author from any era to your favorite place in the world, all expenses paid, of course, who would you take and where would you take them? It could be dinner, drinks, all of the above. And yes, you can bring more than one author.
Oh, that's an amazing question. You know, I would have to say probably, you know, because it's so personal and something that I write about so much, I would love to have dinner with Carlos Ayer, who is a Cuban memoirist who wrote a really beautiful book, Waiting for Snow in Havana, that was about his life and his experiences as a Peter Pan child. And you know, if I could go anywhere in any moment in time, I think I'd want to hear about his experiences in Cuba and kind of have that, because his book really touched me very deeply.
All right. Where would you take him?
I think, you know, if we could time travel to Cuba and kind of live through his memories, that would be incredible.
All right. Time travel to Cuba. I like it. Well, you time travel to Cuba or have time travel to Cuba often. Can you think of a real place in time in history that you would hang out?
There's so much. You know, I love to travel. That's one of those things that I'm always, you know, so grateful for. And I think that kind of comes out in my books as well. So I'm always up for kind of a new adventure and going somewhere I haven't been before.
Okay. So what would you eat?
What would I eat?
Or drink, or both. Do you start with cocktails?
Cocktails are always good. Yeah, that would definitely be good. If we were doing a Cuban experience that I would love, you know, lechon asado, which is roast pork and black beans and rice, and having kind of a traditional favorite Cuban meal.
Okay, and some Cuban cigars.
I will admit I'm not a cigar smoker, but okay. Yes.
All right. Well, I know you got to get going. Of course, I will point at your home base there, ChanelClayton.com. You're on the socials, including Instagram and Facebook. Are you on Twitter?
I'm not on Twitter. I'm on okay. Instagram and Facebook. Yes.
Yeah. And yeah, so what do you want to leave listeners with, you know, scribes who may be thinking about quitting or you know, maybe haven't found the traction in their careers yet. But yeah, just on how to keep going.
I think really just tapping into kind of your passion and perseverance being key, and understanding that, unfortunately, I think the rejection is something we all always deal with. You know, often when people read my bio, when I do things like this, you know, it sounds like the highlight reel, but the truth is, you know, my writing career has been ongoing rejection, and I know will continue to be. I mean, that's part of the ups and downs of being in a creative industry. And so it's really just kind of tapping into that passion and believing in yourself and feeling like the stories that you're telling are important ones that need to be told, and just persevering. I think keep writing is kind of the simplest advice, but it also is, in a lot of ways, I think the most important thing to get you through the natural ebbs and flows that come with being a creative, you know, person in an industry like this.
100%. Well, we really appreciate your time, your words, your wisdom. Again, I'll mention the Cuban Heiress is out now, and yeah, congrats on the reception and everything. You've got to feel pretty good about it. Where are you off to next on your whirlwind tour?
So I am doing radio tours today. So I'm about to go live on Instagram, and then I have quite a few more podcasts today. So I'm excited for that and excited to talk more about books.
All right. Well, we're going to let you take a break, get a coffee or tea. And again, we appreciate you come back in the future, and we'll talk again.
Thank you so much for having me. Have a wonderful day.
And scene. We got it. Thanks so much for joining us for this file. And if you're a fan of the show, simply head over to writerfiles.fm for more. That's writerfiles.fm. I had a little bit of a frog in my throat. I apologize.
So do I.